To the Words on Flick show this week with Janine Coveney. I'm really excited about today's show because we're going to talk about movies that have inspired us that come from overseas, primarily France and Paris in particular. I think European movies and movies from France have influenced our culture, our imagination, certainly African Americans have been inspired to move over there and enjoy more freedoms than they felt they could enjoy here in the United States historically, while our country struggled with civil rights and prejudice. Not that Europe isn't prejudiced, but they're a little more freewheeling and accepting over there. So because we've gotten to a place in the pandemic where many countries are opening their borders once more, it's got me thinking about traveling. And in fact, I just came back from the first trip of my pandemic, which was to Nashville to celebrate the opening of the National Museum of African American Music, which was really exciting and fun. And I got to see a lot of people that I hadn't seen in a while. But it's also a little bit of a cautionary tale because, you know, so many restrictions have been relaxed, particularly in terms of social distancing and mask wearing, that although I thought that I would be super cautious in terms of being around other people, somehow that caution flew out the window and I hugged and kissed people and was around people. So at this particular moment in time, I'm a little nervous, but I digress. But in thinking of traveling, when we can, I know Europe is starting to open its borders. It wants to salvage the summer travel vacation season and have Americans come abroad. So that's happening right now. But I've been thinking of visiting Paris for a long time. I've never actually gone. And so I thought, who can I get to join me in this discussion about the wonders, the marvels, the enlightenment, the history of France, and the movie images that have inspired us and fired up our imaginations. So I thought of my friend and former Essence magazine colleague, Karen Thomas. We worked together at Essence. She was an executive in the advertising and marketing department then. And then she left that industry, the magazine, where she had many successes, particularly the Essence Festival was part of her accomplishments in setting that up. And then she decided to go into education. And in her home state of New Jersey, she established a charter school and ran that for many years successfully. And then when she retired, she fulfilled a dream that she had held for a long time, which was to drop everything, sell everything, and go to Paris to study art history. So I'm excited about my talk with Karen Thomas, who's over in Paris right now, fulfilling her dream of living in the City of Light. So what's to know about her? Her official mini bio, this is what it says, and it's kind of funny and kind of true. Karen Thomas has never worked a day in her life. She pursued her passion for 20 years as Essence Marketing and Special Events Director, retired, then spent the next 20 years developing a $200 million not-for-profit charter school network that grew from a $1 million investment. Her idea of retirement is doing whatever the hell she pleases, including living in Paris to study art history. Her greatest accomplishments are her children and grandchildren, with whom she hopes never to live. So I think that's a great mini bio. So stay tuned for what promises to be a fun and informative chat about movies à la française that have touched and inspired us, recent or not. And we kind of skip through several different genres and talk about life in France. And so we kind of touch lightly on many more movies than we discuss in detail. So if you go to the Words on Flick Show page on Facebook, I'll have some of those films listed. And I'll also include a link to a movie that she mentioned, which is called The Myth of a Colorblind France. So please join me for my talk with Karen Thomas. On Flick Show, all the way direct from Paris, France, which is really exciting. She is there now studying art history after conducting a long and successful career in different areas: marketing, communications, education, administration. That, did I leave something out, Karen?
No, just parenting.
Which is a job in itself.
Indeed. Bonjour, bonjour, Jeanine.
Bonjour, bonjour, Karen. So tell me, was this like a bucket list dream to always go to Paris and study?
Sure, it was a bucket list. But when I was in the third grade, I went to a school where on Wednesdays we actually have French classes. And we learned this little song about Sur le Pont d'Avignon, dancing on this bridge in D'Avignon. Now, I've not been to D'Avignon yet, but I think speaking French as an eight-year-old and being exposed to an actual French teacher who was from France probably planted a seed that just never went away. And, you know, when we worked together at Essence, I did a lot of traveling. So travel has always been a part of my professional life and personal life. And when I retired, I wanted to do something drastically different. I wanted to get away from it all, really disconnect from everything not everything and everyone, but disconnect so that I could just really feel retired. And so I decided, I've always had a passion for art. I have always loved Paris. I had been here before several times. And so I sold my house, gave away everything, packed two suitcases, and moved to Paris.
Girl, that is brave, but it's also what so many women dream of doing at some point in their life, whether it's during their retirement or their middle years with their family. And Paris has such a hold on our imagination as the city of light, the city of art, the artistic renaissance, and also as a haven for Black
expatriates over the years. So I'm sure you're enjoying part of that history over there as well.
I am. And, you know, it's interesting. I was in sort of thinking about talking to you this evening. I went back and I watched a Sidney Poitier movie, mm-hmm. Paris Blues.
Oh, yeah.
And the opening scene is so, it is so real to me now. Not so real like it used to be, but it is so real to me now. Because you see, it's a seedy little club, right? And Paris even makes seedy be seedalicious. and you see these black and white musicians, you see mixed race couples, you see mixed gender couples, you see older women with younger men. That very first scene in that movie is all the things that we think Paris has been over the years, and why Josephine Baker would come here, and why you know, our artists, black artists, would come to Paris, and feel welcome at home.
Yeah, James Baldwin, I was saying, Josephine Baker, other artists, and in that very influential. But I, you know, Paris Blues, I didn't see it until I was, you know, full grown. I didn't see it when it first came out. Movie with Sidney Poitier and Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward and our dearly departed Diane Carroll.
Diane Carroll, yeah.
And when, okay, so the Paul Newman and Sidney Poitier characters are living over there as jazz musicians. And Joanne Woodward and Diane Carroll are best friends, American there. And when they first bump into the musicians, you see that there's like a little flirtation between Paul Newman and Diane Carroll at first, which was very racy for the times. And I was reading about that movie where they were initially going to have the script follow the interracial romances, but the studio was like, no, 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 we can't have. So that was a little ahead of its time. That's why the two couples ended up pairing off according to race. So, but as you say, you do get this walking tour of Paris in the film, and it just makes you want to be there. You feel chic, like you're walking with them down these cobblestone streets and seeing the Eiffel Tower. So I can't imagine how gratifying it must be to be there in person.
It is. I wake up, so I have floor to ceiling windows in my apartment that open out to a balcony. And there is a 16th century church, bigger than St. Patrick's Cathedral, that is in part of my view. On that are very limestone buildings, which is characteristic of the architecture of Paris. But even from a movie perspective, Paris is such a recognizable city, whether it is old Paris or New Paris with the Pompidou Center and some of the other buildings that have been built more recently. But you always get a flavor of Paris, unlike any other city that is photographed or is used as a backdrop. There's just something really, really special, and you know it's Paris.
Just the way the streets and the facades of the buildings, as you say, any aerial shots, we kind of know that, you know, Montmartre is over here, and I don't even know if I'm saying it right, and the Eiffel Tower and things like that. And I have never been to Paris, but I will tell
you. Oh, you got to come.
Trust me, now that, you know, our pandemic is rolling to a close, and I understand that, I just got an email that Spain has opened up. I think Paris is, you know, France is following. I definitely want to come back over to Europe, and I haven't seen, but I've always been fascinated. I'm going to tell you, like, this is really silly and it's a childlike thing, but maybe you'll understand because you were educated over here and we're not that far apart in age, is that growing up, we were surrounded by not fairy tales, which all came from Europe, and, you know, the Brothers Grimm and Hans Christian mm-hmm. Andersen, and then some of the books, that the children's books that you read, Madeline and Hans Brinker and the Silver Skates, which is the Netherlands, all these things, especially the fairy tales, put in my mind the idea that Europe is magical, okay? It's a lot of magic. It's princes and princesses and magical things are in the air in Europe. And it's hard to shake that, even as an adult, you know, we're over here in practical America where everything is democratic and, you know, factual. But to me,
supposedly.
Supposedly. Europe has that air of anything could happen. Ooh la la. You know, people meet and fall in love with one glance. And, you know, it's French bread and, you know, wine and champagne and, you know, and it persists in my imagination.
And I've done about four of those things already today. And it's just, it's going on 10 o'clock here, but I've had champagne today. I had a fresh croissant from the patisserie this morning, and I went out to get that, and they were drinking them. So it was still even warm when they put it in my little bag, and I brought it home. And I, you know, I'm not a coffee drinker, which is what most Parisians drink, but I brought it home, and I was able to sit out you know, on my terrace and just really savor both my buttery, my beurre croissant. And then this evening, sitting out in a cafe, watching the French Open on television with some friends. So, hey, you could do all those things. And I think from a historical perspective, remember that the United States is a newbie in terms of nations. And Europe has had princesses and kings and queens for centuries. And so those images and those things are very, very real here. They're not. When you go into some of the museums here, you can see the amazing jewels and the furniture that was really artwork, and even the artwork that preserved the painting. Well, the paintings were photographs, so the kings had to be painted, and the queens and the family. That was the only way to preserve those images through the centuries. And so it was magical to us, but it's real in European history.
Exactly. And I think that's why we're still fascinated by movies that tell us the biographies of many of the crowned heads, the royalty of Europe, are still popular. We've got all those movies about Elizabeth and Victoria and Marie Antoinette and, you know, all the kings, the Louis and all of that are still in our imagination, even to the point where the whole thing with Meghan Markle marrying Prince Harry has just seized our imagination, because I think it's a little girl's dream that she would grow up and marry a prince, you know?
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, even before Meghan, it was Princess Diana who really made us believe in princesses. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, she wasn't quite supposed to be a princess and wasn't of that ilk and family as much as they had hoped. Mm-hmm. You know, but she was glamorous and beautiful and different and accessible, you know, someone who we thought of as real. And it's interesting that, so not to get political, but this week these last 2 weeks with Naomi Osaka saying, you know, the press is just depressing me here. And it was here in France that the press pressed Princess Diana so hard that this is where she died.
Right. Wow. It's good to be reminded of that, because the European press is, and I know particularly the British press, is much more aggressive. I mean, we have journalists here, but in the UK and other parts of Europe, their habit has been to ask very, very personal probing questions. And I remember when Princess Diana died, it really had a big, big impact on me, a surprising impact on me. I didn't even know that caught up in who she was, but I just liked the fact that she was herself and struggling to change, you know, the monarchy so that she could just be who she was, you know, and committed to her children and to the communities that she served and, you know, all of that. But I digress.
I sat in the middle of my bed at 3 o'clock in the morning watching, you know, her services on television, crying like a baby, like she was my girlfriend. Because yeah. I think to us in our generation, she kind of was a girlfriend, you know? She really, she was a real, for the first time, there was a monarch who was real.
Yes. I think we identified with her in terms of coping with, because I think in the modern age, the technology age, the TV age, you know, before there was so much television and internet, we didn't know what was going on in the monarchy, so to speak. We only knew what we read in the newspapers. And this was really the first internet princess where we read a lot and saw a lot of video about her. And we could, I didn't want to confess that I was in a hotel during a convention bawling when Diana died, but that is true. So, but look at how popular the series The Crown has been.
Crown, yes. Yeah. Yes. So Netflix in France, I have a friend here, a young American sister who actually worked at NBC for a long time in the United States and then decided to leave the United States and come to France and to attend school and get her master's degree. And she has been working for Netflix here in France, which is a very small property. But Netflix Great Britain is the biggest European portfolio of, of flicks that you can get.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to me because there's some properties that you can't get here in France that, you know, you can access in the United States. And when you go to the movie theater here, I had to learn how to read information about which movies have subtitles. So there's something that you look for in a movie here that says in the original language. And if the original language is English, you go to that movie and it's in English and has French subtitles. If it's not in the original, if the original language is not Billie Holiday is playing here now. And there's another movie, I think it's called, that just opened last week because the movie theaters only opened about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. If the first language that the film was produced in, then you have to read subtitles. So, right. And the movie theaters here are very different experience. Like there isn't a huge concession stand in the middle of the movie. The concession stand is over in the corner somewhere, and you can bring your own stuff to the movie theater. And it's really more about the movie than it is, you know, about your gummy bears and your popcorn.
Okay. Are the movie theaters mostly modern, or do they have some big old ornate historic kind of theaters like they still do in some places here in America where the multiplexes haven't taken over yet?
So there are multiplexes here in Paris, but they're small. So remember, everything in Paris is small. The apartments here are small, kitchens are small, bathrooms are small, and movie theaters are small. There's a section in the 6th arrondissement called Odeon, and Odeon has most of the movie theaters, the more modern theaters. So you might have a choice of maybe 4 or 5 movies in one movie theater. In Montparnasse, which is another section, which was very much an arts section of Paris for a very long time during the late 19th and early 20th century. So you had some of the Black artists who would hang out in Montparnasse. And now Montparnasse is where you would find the bigger, I wouldn't call them multiplexes in the way that we know them, mm-hmm. but the bigger movie theaters and the more popular movies are going to come there first. But there are a few small theaters that are more traditional and are going to show probably not the big release movies, but things that you would find, movies you would find down in the village.
Yeah, right? Independents or exactly. You know, foreign films that would be foreign to France, probably those smaller movies.
Right.
Yeah, got it. Wow, that's fascinating. Like I said, I've only been one place in Europe, and that was in Barcelona. And Barcelona is also, you know, it's a big city, but built on a European scale. But I think the movie theater that we ended up going to actually pretty big, and it was actually playing an American movie that was subtitled in Spanish. So we just went in and heard an English movie, but that was yeah. more than 10 years ago. But just to get back to some of the films set in France that I know impacted me, and I know movies, and you know, I was an impressionable child and an impressionable teenager, so some of my choices are kind of old, but I'll tell you one that really had a big impact on me when I was a kid, and I don't know if you know this movie. It's called The Red Balloon.
Oh, I had Bob White at Simmons. Yes, I know The Red Balloon.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, not only did we work together at Essence Magazine, we both attended the same women's college, which is now university, Simmons University in Boston. I don't think we didn't know each other at the time. I don't think
I had graduated by the time you came, Jean.
Yeah. But our experience is similar. So the way in which it was influential is because, if I recall it, I don't think there's much dialogue in it at all.
No, if any.
It's set in Paris. You know that it's in Paris, or at least a French village. And you really do get to see, it's the boy who finds this giant red balloon. And the balloon actually kind of has a life of its own. It's sentient. It becomes his friend, and it follows him around, and it waits for him after school, and other kids. The balloon tries to intervene. Anyway, it's beautifully shot. You see the streets of Paris and kind of how people live, their day-to-day living, the apartments, the very old buildings. And that kind of juiced my young imagination about what it would be like to live in another, you know, city in another country. I don't remember Bob White showing it to us. I had many classes with him, but I'm imagining that he showed it for the visual storytelling. Do you remember why he showed you that film?
Yeah, so that movie really strips down the elements. The music is very French. It's accordion music, yeah. Which is very French. You can get on the subway here and people will be playing the accordion for money, you know, street musicians. The cinematography, again, you know, when I say that you recognize Paris and the what they call the Île-de-France, right outside of the areas outside of France, it established, you didn't have to hear words to say this movie is in France to right. know that that's where it was. You heard the music, and even this little boy's freedom to be able to chase a balloon would never happen in New York City, would never happen in London, right? Only somewhere here. And I think that it allowed us to look at the individual elements of a film without what you usually get, which is all of your senses being stimulated at one time in the movie theater.
Right, right. I think I may have seen it on television. I think I actually had a glossy picture book of it that I had before, as a child, before I ever saw the movie. So you have to imagine this huge hardcover book that had gigantic that told the story. And again, because there's no, it didn't have any captions, but you still understood the story. Another movie that profoundly impacted me, and I always talked about Paris Blues, but this was when I was a little older. In fact, I was grown. It was came out in 1979, and it was called A Little Romance. And starred Diane Lane when she was about 12 or 13 years old.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, it may, if it wasn't her first movie, it was her second movie. And her father was some sort of diplomat in Paris. And so she had to go with her father's second wife to live in this French castle and try to go to this English school. She didn't really like it there. You know, both of her parents sort of neglected her, let her do whatever. And she met this French boy who was the son of a taxi driver. So he's sort of a working class kid who had taught himself English by going to the movies, by watching Humphrey Bogart films. Oh, he had learned English. And so the two of them sort of have an incipient romance. And so when she finds out that her father has to move back to the States and she has to leave, the two of them plot to run away to Venice so that they can kiss under the Bridge of Sighs before she leaves. Ooh. And it's so cute. So not only do you get a glimpse of almost like the ugly Americans, like her parents are like the ugly Americans. Her stepmother doesn't speak French. They don't really know the culture. They neglect her. She's a kid who's sort of streetwise and she like drinking wine and smoking dope and doing all these things. And then they run away and they run into Sir Laurence Olivier, who at that point was, I don't know, in his 80s. It was among one of his last. And he helps Venice. So you have this travel log of them going through the French countryside and then into trying to get to Italy. And it's a wonderful movie. And it just really kind of gave me a lot of images of, you know, the life in France in the 1970s. So that's one of my favorites.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned, you know, learning a language through movies, because I've kind of made a commitment that I'm not going to be that American who won't speak French and mm-hmm. is going to make everybody speak English.
Good for you.
I've been studying French and I have a tutor and I'm part of a group and I'm really being committed to trying to at least be conversant in the language. And one of the things that my teacher always includes in our lesson is some piece of a film or a song. And she says that the more films that you watch, the more you will become familiar with hearing the language and picking out more and more words because you're seeing the action on the screen. So you can kind of visually create the story and hear the words, right? And it's a little bit different than just speaking with someone, but it's helpful in learning the language.
Are you confident in your French conversation abilities?
Not at all, but I can go to the, I know the difference between a patisserie and a boulangère, and I can go to the grocery, there are places I can go and navigate my way. And I always make an effort, but I have fallen too many American friends who aren't trying to learn French, and it makes it difficult to always have someone to speak with.
Yeah. Yeah. My language, second language that I know best is Spanish. But I remember I had a French class like in elementary school. So I learned very, you know, elementary phrases, you know, comment allez-vous, je m'appelle Jeannie, you know, these basic things, quelle heure est-il, you know, just basic things. I know my, what is it? Now I can't remember. I was going to say my left from my right, but now I can't even
gauche
from my, what is it?
Droite et gauche.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I have watched multiple films in French. And I am one of those people who does not at all mind subtitles. I guess if you're not a quick reader, it could be problematic to have to go to a movie and try to look at the action and read at the same time. I've never really had a problem with that. And just as you were talking about how films help you pick out the words. It's helpful to me to see the words written out and then pick them out of the actor's speech. So I feel like my reading French has actually improved quite a lot. And also because French and Spanish have a lot of similar roots. Right. They have Latin roots.
That Latin root.
Yeah. So it's like, I remember seeing the Birdcage, the original Birdcage in French in the 68th Street Playhouse in when I was still in high school. We went, and the story is basic. It's the same. It's just in French.
Wow. So, well, I remember Julie Andrews in La Cage aux Folles.
Oh, really? Or Victor Victoria?
Both.
Oh, was she in La Cage aux Folles?
I thought she was. Well, she's definitely in Victor Victoria, but yeah. I thought she was in, okay. So, but I remember seeing that and hearing that French. And I go back to the Pink Panther.
Oh.
Professor Clouseau.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like the first movie that I remember that was like Shrek of today, where there were like real people and there was an animated association as well.
Yeah.
Which I guess must have been a little revolutionary for its time, because it took a couple decades for Shrek to come out. But the Pink Panther was very popular when I was a kid. I remember that I can hear the song in my head right now, you know.
Yeah, it was an iconic song and an iconic character. And it, for years, I had to really watch the movie closely. I thought that the Pink Panther was a nickname for Inspector Clouseau. It's not. Do you know what the Pink Panther is? This is not a trick question. Either you know or you don't.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Okay. It's the name of the jewel, the Indian jewel that they're trying to steal. And wow, that's a little nugget in and of itself, the Pink Panther. So.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, there have been some more modern movies set here in France, and Netflix has really milked the European themed market with things like Emily in Paris.
Which I just started watching.
Yeah, but you know, I've seen it and I binged through it because I was going, yeah, girl, I remember when that happened to me. Things mixed up and, you know, and seeing the scenes of Paris going, I know exactly where that is. And little things like in France, the first floor is a zero floor, and then you count up from there, which was something she never quite got straight in her building.
Right, she keeps knocking on the hot neighbor's door, thinking it's hers.
Exactly, and she lives in what's called the Champ de Bon, which used to be the maid's quarters in these buildings that were, you know, old chateaus here in There's a lot of realism association that if you are coming here for the first time and spending a considerable amount of time, that you'll go, yeah, that was me in the grocery store.
So it's true that the French are kind of mean.
Well, but you know what? I don't think they're any meaner than Americans.
Than New Yorkers, for sure, huh?
Yeah, because we all want it our way, you know, and we have no problem going to another person's country and saying, you know, well, why don't you speak English? Everybody else does. Well, everybody else. And so to some extent, I've met mean people here and I've met lovely people here, just like everywhere else in the world.
Exactly. Are there any other movies that stood out to you as inspirations that I didn't get a chance to ask you about?
Well, this is a European, a movie set in Europe, not Paris, but I remember when To Sir With Love came out. And I remember thinking, because in first grade, I had a Black teacher in first grade, and I identified Sir with Mrs. Moore, my teacher. And then I love that song that Lulu sang, you know, at the end to Sir with Love. And it was probably the first movie that I really remember dealing with racial issues.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't set in the United States. And that's probably the brilliance of Sidney Poitier, to be able to stand his ground to make a movie like that. But I found that one to be very influential, even though it wasn't in French, it was still another culture that made me think outside of my own bubble.
Yeah, yeah. And it's always been fascinating to me, like my minor in college was sociology. So I was always interested in how other social groups and other cultures behaved. And as you mentioned earlier, wherever I go, I never want to be the ugly American. Like, I never want to be rude and expect people to adhere to my, if I'm trying to speak the other language, I'm also trying to speak with the accent. Like, the accent is really important, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because that totally brands you as an outsider if you don't try to twirl your tongue around their intonations, you know. So yeah, so To Serve with Love was, because teenagers are like all over the world, but you know, racism at that point in the 60s was what it was, and still is apparently, if you watch the series Small Axe from director Steve McQueen, which is about the Caribbean communities in England. And so he kind of covers, you know, the 50s, the 60s, up to modern times, different stories. And you have, what is it called? The Windward Generation, the people who were brought from the Caribbean to England because they needed workers after World War II. Yeah. They needed workers, and now they're there and they don't want them there. Same with us in slavery. They brought us here, you know, against our will. Those people came because they wanted to come. And we're still here, and they don't want to know anything about us. But anyway.
So there's a really wonderful documentary here in France that explores, it's called The Myth of a Colorblind France.
You had sent me a link about it.
Mm-hmm. France wants to rewrite its own history and involvement in colonization around the world, in Asia, in Africa. They were colonizers. They okay. may not have had slaves on French soil in Europe, but Guadeloupe, where France enslaved people.
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting perspective here. They want to, the political party line is that there is no racism in France, and that African Americans who come here bring that with them from a different perspective. It's not the French perspective, which is, you know,
yes.
oh, in the highest order.
Yeah.
In the highest order here. So it's interesting. And so that has been captured in film as well.
I will find the link that you sent in the that goes with the podcast for Words on Flicks, so people can find information about it. And thanks, Karen, for sharing that with us. I know we could talk about this for forever, and I didn't even get to half the movies that I wanted to mention. But of course, we know that France, you know, they have a great artistic storytelling tradition. They came up with the French New Wave. Foreign films were first in this country, usually French, imported mm-hmm. from France or Japan. And now that's changed. We have movies shown here in the States over the last several decades have been primarily from France. So, you know, we've got Francois Truffaut and mm-hmm. Louis Malle and dramas, but comedies, certainly. Highly, highly influential and imaginative. And then you have the big Hollywood musicals, like, of course, I was going to mention An American in Paris, which is one of those big budget musicals that I think when people think of being American and looking to France, they're thinking and American in Paris, because that was a big blockbuster, multi,
very glamorous.
Yes, very glamorous, a musical, great music, great dancing in it. And it is influential.
All of the highlights, all of the things you would want to do when you come to Paris are in that movie.
And then there's things that I haven't seen, like Amelie. I've never seen Amelie, which was a movie, I think, a few years ago about, I guess it's about some kind of magical young woman who makes things happen. I don't know. I'm going to have to see
it. So I've not seen the movie, but I have gone to the places where they filmed the movie. There are places in the Montmartre that actually have little placards that identify places where that movie was filmed. And you'll often see tourists there taking photographs and so forth. And another series, Lupin.
Oh, Lupin, about the thief. The young
man who steals photos, something that happened to his father from the family that he worked for. And there's actually, so that was filmed here. There's lots of Parisian landmarks that you see in that series. And you can actually go online and create your own tour to find those landmarks here in Paris.
Wow. That's one of those series that I have kind of earmarked to plunge into so that I can check it out. It's been getting a lot of good reviews. So,
but I would tell you the most inspirational, I think, movie that uses America to France is Uncorked. If you haven't seen that, you definitely should see it. It's about a young Black man who wants to become a sommelier.
Yes.
And he works to get here to Paris to do that. Of course, and his father wants him to run the family barbecue joint, you know. But the art of cooking and wine and, you know, is something, the hospitality industry is huge. And, you know, the one thing we never stop doing, we may stop buying cars and clothes. We don't stop eating and drinking. And so I think that it's a great tool that could be, you know, used with teenagers just as inspiration, because it's not so much about drinking wine at all. It's about identifying your passion, even if it's outside of your culture and people who look at you don't see you in that. It's really a really good film.
It is. I've forgotten about that film. And it's really well done. So thank you for bringing that up. I have an obsession with the Belle Époque because of the whole idea and courtesans.
So that is so European.
It's very European. So, you know, movies like Gigi and Camille and even Marie. These are all about independent women who live their lives just as being mistresses, as men's mistresses, and being kept on the side, which is a very French idea that actually came to the New World in New Orleans with the idea of plaçage, where white men came and ran their plantations, and they might have had white wives and children, but they also had a mistress of color among the free people of color, and they would support them and educate as well, which is a very interesting idea that's part of our history, sad to say. But anyway, as I said, we could talk about this all night long, and I don't want to take up much more of your time, and maybe this is a subject that we need to revisit. But Karen, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Janine, for inviting me to be a part of this discussion. I mean, being here in France, I've now seen with my own eyes the things I only used to see on film and in the movies, and goes to show how influential, in fact, movies can be and persuasive. You know, they plant seeds that that form our lives and our dreams and our goals. So they're important outlets in our lives.
Absolutely. So I'm going to say goodbye right now. And au revoir. Au revoir.
And merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup. Au revoir, Karan. And
yes. Take care now.
Hey, I want to thank Karan Thomas for joining me for this great discussion, and thank all of you all for checking in on the Words on Flick show. Please join me next month on the third Sunday of the month. Haven't really decided what the theme will be, but you know I'll pick something unusual and off the wall. So thanks for listening. See you next time, and have a fantastic Father's Day. Sending love to all the fathers out there, and sending love to those who have lost their fathers. See you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you.